Welcome once again to A Pane in the Glass podcast. This is your host, Bill Shearhart, National Coach with Curling Canada, coming to you from Grand Bend, Ontario, on the shore of Lake Huron, in the ancestral land of the Kettle and Stony Point First Nations. A Pane in the Glass podcast is sponsored by Canada Curling Stone of Kamoka, Ontario. Today, I've chosen to tell some stories. They're not stories that I've written. They're stories from a book that I read this summer on golf by one of the most well-known of golf writers, Rick Riley. It's his most recent book, So Help Me Golf. I recommend this book, certainly for all golfers and golf fans, but you don't have to be in either of those categories to enjoy the stories that he tells. And so Rick deserves all the credit for this. Again, the book is So Help Me Golf by Rick Riley. The first story is entitled The 6-Foot Golf Course. At the Hanoi Hilton, the infamous North Vietnamese POW prison, the guards had 1,000 rules. No talking, no reading, no signals, all punishable by 3 days in the stocks. But in 1965, when they threw American reconnaissance pilot Colonel George Hall into a 7-by-6-foot isolation cell, they had no rule against what he was about to do. Play golf. It started when he found a stick one day during his half hour of exercise by himself in the yard. He hid it up his pant leg. After that, he'd get up each morning and pick the course for the day. It might be Pebble Beach. It might be Pine Valley. Often, it was his own Hattiesburg, Mississippi Country Club. Every day, for his nearly 4 years in isolation, Hall would get his golf shoes on, kiss his wife, drive to the club, wave at everybody in town, say hello to the shoeshine guy, kid the pro a little, and walk to the first tee. He'd take a couple of waggles with the stick and then make his easy tempo swing. He'd watch it sail. Since he usually hit a driver back home about 240 yards, he'd pace off 240 yards in that cell, about 100 trips from one end to the other. He'd find the ball, and wait, there's Mrs. Hindmiller. "Good morning, Mrs. Hindmiller," he'd say aloud. "Lovely day." Pause. "What's that?" Pause. "It might rain today. Uh-oh. Pat's going to be on me to fix the roof." And then he'd wave and walk on. "Sometimes a guard would open the shutter and watch me," Hall wrote in his book. Commitment to honor. He just shook his head and made a gesture like I was crazy. But Colonel Hall wasn't crazy. He was trying to keep from going crazy. The guard could never understand how much relief, if not pleasure, those rounds gave me, Hall wrote. They gave me many hours of mentally being outside of that jail. Before Vietnam, golf and Hall had been lifelong friends. A scratch handicap. He was the captain of the U.S. Naval Academy golf team. Then the police action, quote-unquote, in Vietnam, got him assigned to a squadron in Okinawa, Japan. In September of 1965, he was flying deep into enemy territory to photograph some bridge damage when he took ground flak. The plane caught fire, and he ejected. It was 2 years before his family even knew if he was living or dead. His injuries from the crash went unintended. He fought dysentery, infections, boils, and vision loss. Those imaginary rounds of golf let him exercise his body and his mind. And what did he shoot? Even par. Always even par, he'd say. After 7 years, 4 months, and 18 days, he was released. He left home at 170 pounds. He was now an even 100. He came home sick and weak, but himself. When he landed in Hattiesburg, hundreds greeted him. He stepped to the podium and saw all those wonderful faces he'd seen in his rounds in his cell. The guy at the grocery store, the lady at the clothes shop, even Mrs. Hindmiller. He thanked each of them for unwittingly helping him get through it. He went home to find he was still Pat's husband, still father to his three kids, despite how much they'd grown in those 7 years. He talked about those rounds he'd played in his cell, says the oldest son, Bobby, now a golf professional. It wasn't just the golf. It was all the people he'd see. It was his tool for keeping sane. What's so amazing is that all that imaginary golf actually kept his game together. He came home with that same rhythmic Payne Stewart-type swing, Bobby marvels. In fact, within a month of his return, he was invited to play by an old friend, the newly crowned 1968 U.S. Open champion, Sergeant Orville Moody. Hall shot 81, and Moody, 76. Colonel George Hall went back to his life. He became an executive for Coca-Cola, ran for Congress, and chaired the local United Way. But he was happiest playing the game that saved his mind. He lived a long, full life. At 83, Hall died with a trophy case of military awards pinned to his chest. In 2015, my wife and I visited the Hanoi Hilton, where both Hall and the late Senator John McCain were held, and were gobsmacked at how tiny, dark, and cold the cells were. And it hit me that it must have taken a very big mind to turn those 42 square feet of cell into sunshine. The next story, Rick Riley calls The Heckler. Only in golf can thousands of people stand and watch two athletes battle to the final moment and not so much as sneeze. Can you imagine the World Series, Game 7, bottom of the ninth, two outs, bases loaded, and all the fans being as quiet as an oil painting? That's why it was so shocking what happened that fall day in 2019 at the Visa Open de Argentina. It was the third playoff hole. Long bombing American pro Brandon Matthews took his putter back on a very makeable 8-foot uphill putt. Suddenly, out of the thundering silence came a huge, guttural shriek. Matthews flinched and missed the putt badly, short and left, costing him not just the tournament, but a pile of pesos and a possible spot in the British Open Championship. He spun towards the sound and threw his arms up, the universal symbol for, "What the hell, man?" "I thought it was intentional," Matthews remembers. Screaming on somebody's shot is utterly taboo in golf. No wonder people instantly turned toward the screamer and glared at him, open-mouthed. "How dare you?" Matthews was devastated. He stared at his feet, looked back at the noise, shook the winner's hand, went back into the locker room, slumped into a chair, and called his dad. Quote, "You're not going to believe what just happened," he said. "I had an easy uphill putt to tie the third playoff hole, and somebody yelled right on my backswing." But that's when tournament official named Claudio Rivas approached. He had an explanation. He said the man who yelled had Down syndrome and only shrieked because of the tension and excitement in the air. It wasn't intentional. The man didn't even understand what he was doing. That's when Brandon Matthews did a crazy thing. He said, "Take me to him." "Take you to him? Right now." They went back on the course and found the man. His name was Wanchi. He was short and a little pudgy, about 40 years of age, with curly red-brown hair under a yellow baseball cap. He was with his parents. The 6'4", 210-pound Matthews came directly at him. Uh-oh. And that's when Matthews grinned and opened his arms. Wanchi came running at Matthews with a giant smile and hugged him like a long-lost brother. Matthews gave him a signed glove and ball and told him, through Rivas, he was so glad he came out to the tournament today. There were no hard feelings, and he hoped that he had fun. Wait, what? It wasn't his fault, Matthews says. I didn't want him to have a bad taste in his mouth about the day. He could have really been upset by what happened, and I wanted him to know everything was fine. I told him I hope he stayed a golf fan for the rest of his life. Where does somebody find that kind of forgiveness, that kind of humanity, that kind of empathy for a complete stranger? Matthews, you see, found it growing up. His childhood best friend had a sister with Down syndrome. His own mom worked in a group home with Down syndrome patients. Brendan Matthews wasn't taught just how to deal with the mentally challenged. He was taught how to love them. These people have so much love in them, he says. There's no fake emotions with them. They just come at you with pure joy. You can see it in their face. There's no hiding it. When Matthews got back to the locker room, feeling much better about his life, his buddy said, "Dude, this is going to start a buzz. Stuff is going to happen from this." "What's going to happen?" Matthews scoffed. "We're in Argentina. I'm still going to finish second. Nothing's going to happen." Oh, but it did. The story of the golfer who hugged the fan who cost him the tournament started getting around. The Golf Channel, NBC, all the golf websites. Arnold Palmer's Bay Hill tournament was so impressed with Brandon, it gave him a tournament exemption. The best part of it all has been the letters from parents of children with Down syndrome, which keep on coming. It's not easy for some of these parents, how their children are treated, Matthews says. I remember one said something like, "Brandon, I want to thank you for what you've done. You've shown people how to treat people like my son. It means so much to us. When the strongest among us help the weakest, it lifts everybody, doesn't it?" Wanchi and his parents are now big believers in the Book of Matthews. They send him inspirational quotes and go-get-em texts. He needs it. Working your way up from golf's minor leagues to the big show isn't easy. But with a swing speed that matches Bryson DeChambeau's and a short game sharp as a Jinsu knife, a lot of people in golf think he can do great things. Me, I think he already has. And this last story is the perfect follow-up to the previous. It's entitled, "She's Got This." When Joe Brockenstedt's wife was about to deliver their second baby, he had dreams. He was going to coach his daughter up. He was going to be in the stands for her every game, meet, and match. He was going to be her doubles partner. But when the little ginger-haired Amy was born, he knew right away his daughter was going to be different. Amy had Down syndrome. He loved her, but it took him a while to get a grip on what he'd lost. "You grieve," Joey says. "I realized right away I wasn't going to have the child I thought I was going to have. I was thinking, I'll never watch her play sports," Joe pauses. "Well, how silly does that sound now?" "Well, very." Spin the clock ahead 19 years to January 30, 2019, the Waste Management Phoenix Open. As part of a PGA Tour outreach deal, Amy was invited to take a swing at the famous 16th hole par 3 at TPC Scottsdale. That's the hole where 20,000 people yell, chug, and dance while pros hit their shots. She'd meet U.S. Open champ Gary Woodland and longtime tour star Matt Kuchar on the tee box. Would you like to hit a shot? Woodland asked her when they met. Yes, she said. Nobody expected much. It was the usual thing we do with disabled athletes. Anything she did in front of the 5,000 gathered there, even if she dribbled it off the tee, was going to be greeted like she's just climbed K2. There'd be a lot of, "Ah, way to goes," and, "Well, bless your hearts." But they didn't know Amy very well. "Were you nervous?" "No," she says. "Well, why the hell not? I've had to hit that shot at 16 twice, and I was as nervous as a late November turkey. The first time, I was so nervous, I snap-hooked my 9-iron into the stands. Clatter, rattle, rolling laughter. The second time, I barely got it onto the far right edge of the green. I came off the tee dripping with relief. "My God, that was terrifying," I said to the guy next to me. "What's this?" the guy said. "Nah." Turned out to be Tim Tebow. Then he stepped up and hit it to 3 feet and won the contest. Amy is like Tebow. She never gets nervous. Amy completely focuses on one shot at a time. Not the one before and not the one after. She doesn't know whether she got a 3 or a 5 or a 9 on a hole, says Joe, her coach, caddy, and gopher. For us, it's just the very next shot. Amy isn't trying to make birdies or pars or break 100. She just wants to hit the next shot well and have fun. The shot that day was 117 yards. Joe gave her the hybrid 6. Amy reared back and made the same nearly flawless swing she makes every time. Good balance, finished with the right shoulder pointing at the target, posing. It rocketed off the club face. The mouths on Woodland and Kuchar fell open in tandem. It flew high and sweet, but a little right and into the bunker. The crowd went crazy. TV cameras zoomed in on Amy's happy grin. She was looking up at the crowd and waving. Jubilant, the sixum of Amy, Woodland, and Kuchar and their 3 caddies walked towards the green. Fans were yelling for her. "They love me," Amy said to Woodland. "Awesome." But her lie in the bunker was not so lovable. The lip in front was taller than Amy. Woodland asked her, "Do you want to hit it out?" But in a tone that said, "Let me go get that one out of there because that's a very hard shot." But Amy replied, "Yes, I do. I've got this." Woodland and Kuchar threw their heads back. Who knew she'd also have swagger? Amy climbed down into the bunker and hit the most beautiful little escape to within 15 feet of the hole. The crowd went double crazy. Nobody asked her if she wanted to putt it. "Why don't you go ahead and make this?" Woodland said. "Yeah, I got this," she said again. She poured it right into the center, perfect speed, par. The crowd went triple nuts. Woodland hugged her and yelled, "You are so awesome." Amy waved some more and blew the spectators' kisses. That up and down goes down as one of the most up moments in down history. "You're amazing," Kuchar said. Well, Joe has known that her whole life. She may be intellectually disabled, but she's not athletically disabled. She's got a beautiful golf game, and she's a gamer. The more it matters to her, the more you can bet on her. Amy Brockerstedt, now in her early 20s, is arguably the most famous athlete with Down syndrome in America. She was the first athlete in an intellectual disability to play in the Arizona High School Golf Tournament. Yeah, you read that right. Amy Brockerstedt, who has Down syndrome, played in the actual Arizona High School Golf Tournament. "Were you scared?" I asked her. "No," she says, "I was happy." She finished 77th out of 90. Then she became the first athlete with an intellectual disability to ever receive a college athletic scholarship to Paradise Valley Community College in Phoenix. And this was no gift, no publicity gimmick. She was on the team based on her ability to get the ball into the hole, not on her ability to make people feel charitable. She worked her way up the roster to the 4th spot In one tourney, she finished 6th out of 25. In 2021, Amy became the first athlete with Down syndrome to play in a national collegiate athletic championship when Paradise Valley went to Florida to compete in the NCAAs. "Were you nervous?" "No," she says. "I played with my new friends." "I'm just going to stop asking." "When my daughter, Ray, was 12, I got to coach her school basketball team, and I loved it." Joe Bockerstedt grieved how he'd never get to do that for Amy. "Now, does 100 times the coaching, caddying, and gophering than he ever got to do for his first daughter? This whole thing turned out better than my wildest imagination," he says, half exhausted and half delighted. So far, 53 million people have seen the video of Amy's amazing par at TPC. No day goes by that Amy doesn't get recognized, and whether they're leaning out of a car window or turning the wrong way on an escalator, they all say the same thing. "You got this." "Oh, definitely." Well, there you have it. Those three stories just lift you. You lift your spirits, lift your hearts. I just loved reading those stories. And again, from Rick Riley's new book, So Help Me Golf, available at all bookstores. And I got mine through Amazon, I believe. It's a great book, and I urge you to pick up a copy. Again, Rick Riley, So Help Me Golf. Well, we're coming up to mid-August here on Lake Huron. I can see that some of the high-performance teams are gathering and getting very serious about their training for the upcoming curling season. It will be exciting. When I read those three stories in Rick Riley's book, again, So Help Me Golf, it certainly lifted my spirits, gave me that little tap on the shoulder that, first of all, mental rehearsal is extremely powerful. You can practice impactfully any place. You don't have to be on the pitch, on the diamond, on the court, on the course, or on a sheet of curling ice. Through visualization and imagery, your mind can become very strong, and that strength gets translated to your technical ability. And the two stories about athletes with Down syndrome. Well, that's Special Olympics, and you know how I feel about Special Olympics. They have an enthusiasm, a spirit, a love of what they're doing, and they just want to compete with their new friends, as Amy said. If you ever want to do something rewarding, just get involved with Special Olympics. Loved all three of those stories. So again, this is Bill Shearhart, national coach with Curling Canada, coming to you from the ancestral lands of the Kettle and Stony Point First Nations in Grand Bend, Ontario. It's past midsummer now, and we're starting to see our high-performance teams get very serious about their preparation for the upcoming season. It's not going to be too long till we're going to hear "Hurry Hard," and that ice will be ready for us to start the season of 2022-23. Until next time, as I always say, stay safe and think happy thoughts, and certainly these stories give us real reason to have those happy thoughts.